Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Current. I'm your host, Nadia Last, and I am so thrilled. I have such a special treat for you today because I'm sitting across from a woman who I deeply admire. Her name is Brooke Baxter, and Brooke is really special for a multitude of reasons, and I have been wanting to bring her onto this podcast pretty much as soon as I first met her. She's a woman that I met earlier in 2022. She reached out to me for some one-on-one human design counsel. We started exploring her energy and those that she orbits very close around, and even a special animal that she had in her life, which it's something about human design that not many people know, that you can actually look up some animal charts. And our work together expanded as she joined Sam and I's human design training. And Brooke is the type of person that I feel so lucky that she came to me for support. She's someone who's advanced in her spiritual training. She has been a very talented animal communicator for over 15 years. Brooke is also a very, very attuned human. Her presence and her wisdom enters the room almost before she does. And she also is a trained Reiki master. She's working, I'm actually not super familiar with Reiki, but based on my understanding, she's working with the most advanced Reiki energy that we are aware of on this planet right now. And she's been doing that work for over 17 years. Beyond that, Brooke is a very present mother, a very present wife, and she also has a fantastic household of animals that she's tending to each day. And beyond that, she's also a horsewoman. And so, Brooke, just sitting across from you brings me so much joy. I can feel my heart expanded right now into this conversation. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Nadia. I am filled with excitement and just a real sense of grounded love sitting here with you.
It's really, really fun. And I can sense that our conversation is going to go into many different directions. I actually have a couple of questions that were sourced from my Instagram audience because people are really interested and curious about animal communication. So to kick off our conversation today, I would just love to hear in your words, and you have such a fantastic and unique way with words, what is animal communication to you?
Animal communication includes what you and I are doing right now. We are exchanging information and energy. We're doing it with our words out loud, but we're also doing it as we mingle our energy in this space and our hearts are connecting, our intentions and like-mindedness are awakening to one another. The animal communication is an extension or another version of that exchange of information. I think it's the most basic form of communication on the planet. All sentient beings share it. And it isn't a magical, special gift that just a few people have. I think that's really important to stress. It's not a superpower, and it isn't limited in any way. Every single one of us can do it. We were born to. We already are in many cases, but don't realize it. And all of the animals around us, this is their language. And it's a matter of us letting go of some of the words we get caught up in and some of the conditioning of our human society and getting back in touch with the vibrations, the intentions, the thoughts, the sensations, the memories that we can transmit to one another non-verbally. It includes body language. But it isn't just body language. It really is an exchange of ideas and feelings and thoughts. When you and I were getting ready to join each other today, I think we were probably already feeling a connection forming before we got live on the interview. And it's that very same thing. It's the way you often will know who is calling you or texting you before you look at your phone screen. You're feeling that bridge beginning to form between you and another being. The animals do that all day long, especially the social animals who work in herds and packs across great distances and need to be able to communicate with one another, sometimes without making any sounds or without being able to fully see one another's body language.
Wow. Wow, Brooke, I think what is an incredibly salient point of what you're saying right now is that we all have access to this. This is like the building blocks of communication and how energy moves through our world. And I think a big focus of our conversation today can be demystifying this a bit. And I want to let everybody know that I actually have had a quite personal experience with Brooke's reading style and her animal communication style. I had a session with her this previous week, and Brooke was able to tap into the energies, the unique soul and energetic makeup of two of my dogs, that my two dogs, Murphy and Otis, that have such specific personalities. And it was such a grounding experience to hear Brooke communicate in a lot of specificity, the dynamics in our daily living situation, and help understand the underlying motivators for both animals and peel back the layers around the spiritual meaning around why our souls chose each other and chose to orbit so closely together. And so, Brooke, I'd love to hear in your words, the preamble that you give folks if they're receiving a reading from you or a session with you for the first time.
So I always like to start out by just seeing what questions the human might have, not for their animal, but just how do you feel about animal communication, about what we're about to do? Do you have questions for me on how it works? I'm super happy to delve into the specifics of the science and energy of animal communication. I love it. I never want people to feel like they are totally reliant on me as some sort of magical being with the superpower to hear their animals. I really want to help them learn to do it themselves. That's the biggest focus of my practice, is that problem solving, connecting piece. So I love to start off with, do you have any questions for me about how this works? And then I really want to ensure my human participants that this is their conversation. And so I share with them that I function as a translator. I am, again, using that bridge metaphor, I am building that pathway between the animal and their humans so they can hear one another clearly and also answer one another clearly, that it is two-way communication. I see my work as actually very creative, as well as being very informative, because I get the joy of translating into words all of these movies and feelings and smells and instincts and emotions that the animals share with me. And I really love for the conversation to go back and forth, where the human feels able to leap in and react and share their own perspective and emotions, and ask lots of questions.
You also shared with me that animals actually don't think in negative language. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So as I said, it's really important for me to set up a situation in which the animals and their humans can move forward together and solve problems together. I'm always here, but I don't want to be a crutch for anybody. I love for the relationships to continue to grow on their own. One huge tip is never use negatives. So no, not, never, don't. These things don't translate energetically. When I say or think, don't jump on the counter, the only image and sensation and energy attached to that phrase is actually the jumping on the counter. So the negatives don't translate. And so part of the fun of animal communication is always finding an active, present, positive way of reframing your language. And it kind of keeps me on my toes. At this point, I'm really practiced at it, but sometimes I have to get really creative to think about ways to say, don't bark, don't run, you know, or it's keep your feet on the floor. It's maintain calm and quiet. What's really fun about it is that it has so many implications for our own human world. And I find, particularly as a parent, it can be a really awesome tool when working with children as well.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. Is there an example that's coming to mind of ways in which you've had to direct an animal that might have been particularly stubborn into sort of taking their place in a more positive directing way?
I think there are probably countless examples. A big piece of my practice is definitely problem solving. It seems to be an area that people reach out to me for. I would say some of the most complicated ones are where anxiety is involved. Particularly, a lot of dogs, and interestingly, coming out of the most severe lockdown time of the pandemic and now into busier life and more comings and goings, I've had a lot of people coming to me saying, my dog is running the windows and pacing and barking and panicking and behaving as if they have separation anxiety, and that wasn't an issue before. My dog is barking at every car that goes by, every person that comes to the door. We have a hard time getting down the sidewalk together. So all sorts of things like that, where the dog is suddenly feeling like, hey, I've had my family at home and I've been in charge of them and I've known exactly where they are at all times. And it's all worked out great. Now everybody is leaving in different directions and at different times, and our routine is changing and I'm not in control anymore. And so the dog begins to have a lot of anxiety and a lot of control behaviors. And so working with that, first of all, I want to get really active and positive on the reactive behavior, right? So really reinforcing that calm. Your job is to ignore. Your job is to relax. That's the kind of messaging. And then building into that also that release of control, so that the dog isn't carrying the responsibility of monitoring their family's comings and goings. And so there's a little bit of complicated rewiring there. And I really enlist my human clients to help with that. Because I always say, this is a conversation. It's not magic. I can't change everything in one session. What I can do is set the stage for all of you to work more clearly with one another. And I give them homework. I give the dog homework. I give the human homework. Reminders, little catchphrases that then can become part of their routine together. And that seems to be really effective. I will also say, my favorite way to start a session is just by allowing the animal or animals to have the floor, meaning we don't come in with, hey, I'm really worried about, or what are we going to do about? But instead, we come in with, hi, how are you? What's on the top of your mind? And what's so fun is 9 times out of 10, what the animal brings up is exactly what the human has been holding in and waiting to talk about. And it really highlights how the our animals in our lives are listening to us all the time and feeling us all the time. They're right there with us. They know more about our lives than we do sometimes. They're such keen observers and coming from a different perspective as well. So it can be so informative. And when you realize that you've both been worrying about the same thing, and now suddenly you have this bridge between you in order to discuss it and work on it, it can be so healing and relieving and powerful. And I find change and success begins right there, just by hearing each other.
It's so reparative because it feels like it's bringing both the animal and the human back on the same team, because they are on the same team, and viewing this, you know, quote unquote problematic behavior from actually just a miscommunication standpoint versus an opposing force standpoint.
Absolutely.
There was a question that we received that is very much related to what you're talking about, this example, Brooke, which is someone asked, do our animals get sad when we leave them at home during the day?
Sometimes. And sometimes they're happy for the break. So just like us, they are each individuals. And that's one of the biggest things that I am so excited to share with the world. And it's one of my favorite parts about my work, is to really highlight the way we do have, some of us have animals that just want a break, that do just want to go nap for a few hours and be relieved of the responsibility, their perspective on their responsibility to bring joy or entertainment or comfort to the family, right? We have others who are go, 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 and really want to be a part of the action at all times. And it can be a bit more of a struggle when they're left home. But I always try and create positive routines around separation so that the animal has, whether it's a particular activity to keep them busy or a particular space that is really theirs and theirs alone. And that can be kind of fun to work with a specific family on their dynamic and their routine and make it positive for everybody.
You're bringing up 2 points here that I want to highlight. The first is that it sounds like each animal feels as though they have a role within the familial dynamic. Is that what you're saying?
100%. Absolutely.
And you brought up these different roles like the entertainer or the joy bringer. I know that my particularly ornery and specific and hilarious bulldog is the protector, or so he thinks right now. And we're working to relax that a little bit more into calm and just being, you know, adorable, basically. But what are some other roles that animals in our lives play?
So what's really interesting is that we have ideas about their roles, right? And then they have their own ideas. Sometimes those really line up well, and sometimes that creates conflict. Sometimes animals come to decide roles for themselves that aren't really appropriate within the structure of the household or our society, and we have to work a little bit on that. And I always like to do it from a point of view of being fair to both the animal and the human. But for example, I know we've talked a lot about dogs today. Part of it is because they are such engaged and vocal members of our family. They're really, really socially oriented. The pack, the family is essential to who they are and is so important in their own dynamic. So they work really well with us, but they also take up a lot of energetic space. And it's important to them to have roles. You brought up the idea of a protector. That's often a role a dog will feel called to. It isn't necessarily often an appropriate or productive role for a dog. And within across species, but particularly the social species, whether in both prey and predator species. So we can take the example of horses as well as obviously being a prey social species versus dogs, which are predatory social species. There are hierarchies and there are natural leaders. There are those that feel they need to be leaders, but it's a real struggle for them. There are those who want it, but will never have it. And there are those who are totally unsuited to leadership and have zero interest in it as well. So part of my job is being able to feel out those natural dynamics and leanings, and then work with the animal and the human to make that productive. But some other roles, I would say comforter. A comforter is a really big role that a lot of animals play, not just dogs, certainly horses, cats, even though they have a reputation of being aloof and solitary. Cats certainly play that role. Birds play that role. All sorts of animals can play that role for humans. And I think a big part of why humans welcome animals into their home is to provide that emotional comfort and support, that quiet presence, that safe space to bring emotions to. That can be such a beautiful role. I definitely have known a good number of animals, though, who can take it too far, who can take that role and the responsibility of it so deeply into themselves that they begin to empathetically absorb a lot of the stress and even take it on physically. So that's another area that I spend a lot of time working on, highlighting for the humans how that can take place, giving them actual energetic tools for clearing their animal's energy. And that's where the Reiki piece is a really beautiful partner to the animal communication, because I can bring in that energy work to help with the clearing and to help sort of redefine how the animals take on that role of comfort.
Sounds like a very delicate place to be in as you're receiving messages that are very direct and sometimes perhaps urgent about what's happening and how to then translate that message back to the human that you're working with.
Yes. I actually trained as a writer most of my academic life, beginning in high school and then on to college. I majored in creative writing. I have a Master of Fine Arts in creative writing. I really believed that that's what I was going to do with my life. It's a bit of a long story of how I ended up as an animal communicator instead of a writer. But the short version is that coming out of graduate school right around September 11th was not a moment in time to publish a really, really literary, poetic novel that wasn't what the world needed in that moment and what was being put out at that moment. And there was a lot of heartbreak for me surrounding that. And I naturally took that heartbreak to the animals because they've always been a part of my life and I've always adored them. And I began volunteering at all different kinds of rescues, shelters, working with often the most complicated cases, a lot of aggression and anxiety and things like that with dogs, a lot of unpredictability and sensitivity with horses, a lot of injury rehab, a lot of complicated things. And so as I was doing this, I began to also travel and work with different masters around the country and the world, studying different modalities, trying to just increase my toolbox to benefit these animals in these really difficult situations. And suddenly one day there I was. I actually had a line of clients at the door, literally, just people coming to me saying, we need your help for our animals. We want to do this with you. And it was very, very organic. But I don't think my training as a writer was a mistake. It was very much part of this journey because it allows me to be a really effective translator. The way I've always enjoyed playing with words allows me to find a lot of different ways to get the animals' messaging across and to also share the humans' messages with the animals. It allows me some creative flexibility. It also means that when an animal stops me in my tracks and corrects me, which does happen a lot, I'll be rambling and sharing my translation and I'll feel the animals just jolted, stop me. No, that's not the right word. That's not the correct translation of this energy. And so I have to go back into my trove of words and phrasing and play a little bit until I've hit on the right tone and intention that the animal is trying to convey. And it's really fun, actually.
It's one of the many reasons I wanted you on the podcast, because a trove is exactly what I feel like you pull words out of a hat. It's so fun. It's such a joy. And I'm remembering a specific example from our reading where you said, and Otis will sit on the couch and he'll meditate. And Otis stopped you and he was like, I'm not going to meditate. I have way too much going on that I'm plotting and scheming. Like, I'll rest, but I won't meditate. Brooke, I want to talk more about your story and your pathway in, but I want to go back to one quick point that you made before around routine. And I wanted to ask, is it correct that all animals in some way or another want routine? Is that a healthy thing to implement, regardless of the being that you're with?
I've really found that it is. I have. And I think the truth is, it's really beneficial and comforting for most of us as well. And a routine doesn't have to be a really strict schedule. A routine can be a shape that we generally provide for each day, but that has some wiggle room for individual expression or opportunities that may arise. So I don't like to think of it as a rigid process in which there's only one way or order of doing things, or you must do this before you do this, but rather, what are the ways we can shape our lifestyle together, shape our days together that are really productive, that provide some boundaries for safety and comfort, but also allow for individual expression and fun?
And it feels like you, I don't have children in this lifetime, but it feels like that could be perhaps directly translatable to having kids.
Absolutely.
That's beautiful. So Brooke, going back to your story, I want to zoom into this time when you finally had people kind of lining outside your door and asking you for animal communication readings. How did you feel at that point? Did you feel a little bit nervous to get into it?
It actually felt like I found home. It really felt like exactly where I was meant to be in that moment. It happened really organically, and it just kept growing and building. The truth is, I'm not a big marketer, although born under the marketer. I have always just let this grow naturally. I love the way it is spread word of mouth, because then I really feel like everyone coming my way is already approaching me with a level of trust and readiness. It's felt like my calling and not something I ever would have predicted as a child. And I think that's the piece that's kind of exciting for me to share, is that we can spend a lot of time, especially in childhood and early adulthood, expecting to be a certain person or training to be a certain thing or live up to a certain way of functioning within our society. And I very much did that. I was very much a rule follower. And then this came to me and I allowed myself to take the chance, you know, to just like deep breath, go for it. And it's clearly who I am.
How did the people in your life react when you shifted into this work?
It's like it made perfect sense to all of them too.
That's so lucky.
Really received with a lot of warmth and support. So very, very blessed in that regard.
It's beautiful. And it feels in a way that your soul sort of created these different contracts, these contracts with the people in your life so that they would be supportive, that they would help pave the way for you. And I'm also wondering about how you set energetic boundaries, because I think the way you started this conversation today was so beautiful. There's no, you know, this isn't a magic trick. This isn't something that just I can do. Everyone has access to this. And yet, you know, after receiving a reading from you, I'm like, wow, Brooke, like, I'm like, call up Otis anytime and let me know why he's getting so specific about this. How do you set boundaries, energetic boundaries in your life?
Such an important question, and definitely one I still struggle with on a daily basis. Rewinding to the very, very earliest days, it actually all started with a horse coming into my dreams. A horse I knew, I didn't own, but didn't belong to me, but I knew and had a relationship with its person, and really came bolting into my dreams with a very serious long list of issues that needed to come to the surface. And it was all really, really clearly laid out. It was a conversation, and I knew right away that it was not sort of a dream processing. This was a message that needed to be shared. And from there were quite a few sleepless nights, because it almost opened the floodgates. At the time, I lived across the street from a barn with over 40 horses in it. And it was as if they all came galloping through my windows. And I had no boundaries. And it was so intense and overwhelming. And so I began to work more seriously with energy and with the layers of my own energy field. And in fact, the horses were particularly instrumental in that, because they have such enormous energy fields and a beautiful facility with expanding and contracting their energy bubbles. Horses are quite wonderful at that. And so they really were my teachers in how to set some firm, large boundaries. And then also how to create filters of different sizes. And so I began to work with, well, I'm putting out my protective firm boundary, but today I'm going to be working with these three animals. So I will make openings in that boundary, energetic openings in that boundary that are the exact shape of these three animals beings. There are three energies. So I began to be like really purposeful about it and kind of quite strict about it for a little while. And that was super important to me in the beginning years. As time went on, and I started to take on more complicated cases. I might find myself working with a lost animal that might take several days to find. And so I would say, all right, I'm going to stay open specifically to that animal's vibration. So setting an intention, just a very clear energetic intention. And again, none of this is fancy, complicated stuff. It really is just putting it out there to the universe. I am open to this specific being's energy and to the transfer of energy between us for this time period until we have concluded our work together. And just saying that, that's it. That's, for me, that creates a specific filter. And for many years, I was very facile with putting, I had so many layers of filters, and I would work with them and move them around quite specifically and intentionally and actively each day. I found that after I had my own children, many of those boundaries wilted a little bit. And I have begun again this many years into practice to struggle a bit with having firm boundaries around my work. I find myself more and more often leaving myself quite open. I also have certain clients that have been with me for many, many, many years, whose animals I know intimately, with whom I work on a very regular basis. I do find myself leaving the doors open to them almost all the time. I will receive messages from those that I work with quite regularly and am open to in that way. And sometimes that's been really helpful or important to the humans in their life.
You're talking, I love what you're saying about that it's just about setting the energetic intention. And I think that can go for everything in our lives. Like, set your mind and your intention and your heart towards something and watch how the universe responds. It's a call and response with the universe. You're talking about energetic boundaries with the animals that you're communicating with. What about energetic boundaries with the people in your life that kind of tap you on the shoulder and they're like, hey, Brooke, can you quickly tap into this? Can you quickly tap into this? Does that happen for you?
Constantly. I have certain people who really do that a lot. I have others who are very polite and patient and will really hang back and just say when you have a chance. And I have some who really are urgently right there quite a lot. And that's hard. It's hard to set boundaries with the human clients because I care about each and every one of them. Many of them I've known for so many years and I've seen them through many animals or many different circumstances. And again, I would say this is an area I struggle with in my life because I really do want to stretch out my arms and hug them all the time and be there for everyone always. But I've also learned that I need to put parameters around my availability in order to be most present each day.
Thank you for sharing that. And I sort of want to shift our conversation a bit because I can feel the collective curiosity around horses and how special your path has been with working with horses. And I know it's a big part of your practice. And so we can start anywhere here, but I'm kind of feeling curiosity around what you touched on briefly, which is that the horse's aura or energetic field is big. And I can also feel a lot of curiosity around equine therapy and the growing popularity there.
Our relationship with horses, just humans' relationship with horses, is so unique and extraordinary. We have this amazing partnership with dogs in particular, right? But we really walk side by side with them. Horses, not only do we interact with them on the ground, but we literally plug our energy field into theirs when we ride. So without getting too in-depth into it, but our energy system, our chakra system lines up vertically along our spines. The horses, as four-legged beings, it lines up horizontally along theirs. When we sit on a horse, we're literally plugging a root into their heart and forming a cross of energy. So it's incredibly powerful. And horses are deeply empathetic beings, incredibly emotional species. It is actually their emotional nature that is part of their survival technique. and part of their bonds with their herd and how they communicate with one another. They have a gift of mirroring. That's often something they will do, is mirror emotions and sensations. It's a way of sort of transmitting that information from one to the other through a herd, but they do it with us as well. So what a horse gives you, their demeanor, their reactivity, it's really coming from within you most of the time. So it's this incredible reflection and a way in which we can see ourselves more clearly. They're also profoundly forgiving beings as a rule. They have a lot of patience for us, for our mistakes, for our tantrums, for our needs. And so it can be a really beautiful relationship that is unlike any other.
How did your connection to horses begin?
As a little girl taking riding lessons on a spotted horse in my pink cowboy boots in a brownstone on the Upper West Side of New York City. It was an old storied riding academy called Claremont on the Upper West Side of New York City. And the horses actually would go up and down ramps because they would live on the various floors. This is amazing throwback to another time. But that's where it began. And truly, from the first moment I ever stood next to a horse and felt their breath on me, I was totally lost. I am still to this day a completely horse crazy girl.
And it's special because I think your daughters both have a pretty special connection to horses as well.
They do. My eldest is an amazing rider with tremendous determination and passion for it. My youngest has very little interest in riding. She will ride, but she will ride when, you know, all the rainbows are in the sky and the fairies are on her shoulders and it's all. But what she could handle, medicate, take care of at 7 years old, every horse she knows. She knows their ins and outs and their needs and their routines to such a beautiful degree. And it's awesome to see how the two of them have found their own path to horses and their own things that they're drawn to about them.
I feel a very ignorant question forming, and it might just be my own, but I'm sure a lot of people ask this. Do horses want to be ridden? Do horses like being ridden?
It depends. So just like us, all individuals, some love it. Some really see it as their life's work, that engagement and that partnership. It becomes a real driving, beautiful thing for them. And I have known some that when they could no longer do that work, they felt they were done and they were ready to leave this earth. Others have very little interest in it, whether because of past experiences that are not positive or just who they are, just the wildness in them. The beautiful thing about horses is there are so many ways to interact with them. I went through many years of living with horses, but not having any horses to ride, of really just being in a caretaking situation. And it solidified for me that even if I could never ride them again, as much as I absolutely adore it, even if I could never ride a horse again, I just want to know them and be near them and feel them.
I'm wondering if you want to share, you know, a specific example of a horse that really was formative in your understanding of yourself and perhaps just your understanding of energy.
I would say every animal and certainly every horse I've ever known or loved or encountered has affected me in some way. I've had many in my own personal life who have taught me profound lessons. Had one very big stoic old horse who looked at me one day and said, "You're always working. Come in here and just have fun. Whenever we see you, you are working. Just have fun." That was a really big moment. And that was at a time in my life when I had very, very young children. And I was also really actively growing my practice and trying to still work out in the field 40 hours a week with, you know, an infant in the sling and just going for it. And it stopped me in my tracks. That wisdom of we're not just here to work. One horse in particular in my personal life, a horse named Spellbound, who was with me for over 20 years until he passed here at home in our arms, really showed me energy in a whole new way. Actually visually transmitted and shared to me the look and shape of energy. It's almost hard to speak of all of the lessons that he transmitted and the force that he was in my life, and really still is, even though he's no longer on earth. But when we talk about energy and the shape of a horse's bubble and what they're able to do with it, he was so in control of his energy that he could actually block someone from entering his space without moving his body. And the amazing thing about the way he projected energy is that even people who didn't understand energy felt the edge of his bubble as an impermeable structure. So that was really an incredibly powerful and beautiful thing to witness, that he would block certain people from entering his stall, from literally entering his barn, if he felt that their energy was unbalanced. And he could project his bubble in such a way as to hold them at the threshold. And you would sort of see these very confused people thinking like, why can't I move? And literally being able to move forward into his space. And then the way he could instantly, within a second, drop it completely to the ground and, for example, allow a child to run right in. So it was a really, really vivid example for me of how we can protect ourselves and how we can also be vulnerable with those that we're ready to be.
Where our conversation started with boundaries, I could see why this was such a helpful thing to be modeled for you, of just energetic boundaries, of unbalanced energy. And that's, I just think it's so beautiful. And I can feel your heart as you talk about Spellbound. And there was another question that I received that feels like now is the right time to ask. Someone asked, are you able to connect with animals that have passed?
Absolutely. Yeah, something I spend a lot of my practice doing.
And how do you feel like you are able to connect with Spellbound's energy? You said that you still feel him a lot. How do you feel him for anyone who's trying to connect with their animals that have since passed, that they still feel so deeply connected to?
So I feel him most often now in the moments that I need him. It's a totally selfish thing, and I'm so grateful that he continues to be here for me in that way. He has sent signs. So there's a hawk that lives here, I feel when I've got a big question looming, when I've got a big challenge ahead, when I'm nervous or anxious about something, it's like he sends this hawk swooping down. The hawk will literally swoop it down low in front of me and then back up to the tree. And it really only happens in these moments when I'm sort of wringing my hands over something. And I know from him that this is like a pact between us, that he said, I'm going to give you these signs when you need them. So you feel that I'm still here. I've got a stone bench up at the top of the hill next to my barn. I call it my prayer bench. And I sit there sometimes just looking out into the horizon. And it's as if I can see all my animals who have passed on gathered there on the edge of a cloud. Just a circle of counselors willing to be there for me.
If someone's listening to this and they want to start to connect with the animals that they do have presently in their lives, where do you often suggest that people start?
Not with your own. Mm. And I know that sounds a little bit frustrating, but the very most difficult thing to do in the universe is connect with your own animals. We're deeply connected to the outcome whenever we talk to our own. So I really recommend that people exchange animals with a friend. or a neighbor or somebody they know where they can get some confirmation on the messaging they're receiving. Self-doubt is your worst enemy as you begin to communicate with animals. The instinct will be, the conditioned response will be to say, that's my imagination. That's crazy. I'm making things up. But if you say to a friend, hey, would it be all right if I asked your goldfish some questions, your cat some questions, your bird some questions, and pick some questions that they will actually, you don't know the answer to, but the human will be able to provide you some confirmation and reassurance on. And just explore. One great way is actually free writing or in meditation, just like letting it flow through and not editing yourself or questioning. I remember early on, I was communicating with a dog and I started to smell bacon, and then I'm getting a toaster and I'm thinking, like, I must be out of my mind. Like, why in the world would this cute little dog be talking about a toaster? And where are we going? This has nothing to do with the question the human has posed, you know, and I'm thinking I'm being distracted and trying to brush these thoughts away. And as I'm sharing the reading back with the person, and my self-doubt wants to hide the toaster and the bacon and all these funny little things that have come up, I say, just let it out. Just go for it. And so I said, well, I'm smelling a lot of bacon and I have this toaster here and this reflection, looking at the reflection in the toaster. And the person gasped and said, every morning while I'm making breakfast, she likes to sit on the counter and stare at herself in the toaster. So you never know what crazy little tidbits are actually a poignant thing. And this animal was at the end of their life and passing over. And it actually seemed like such a silly, impossible thing to me. It was actually a very meaningful anecdote for the person. So my biggest advice is to go for it and to be brave and to trust yourself.
Brave Little Toaster, I think, is the name of the Disney movie.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
I actually, Brooke, have never talked about this before, but I had a one-on-one client I was working with very early in my practice a couple years ago, and she asked if I could receive any messages for her cat. And at that point, I wasn't doing any, you know, formal intuitive work, and I was really nervous about it. And I said, there are no guarantees, but I'll sit in meditation and see what comes through. And I sat on a hammock in my backyard, and I just tuned into the frequency of this cat, and I asked, can I receive messages from you? Can I connect with you? Do you give me permission to enter your field? And then I took out my journal and started writing. And this cat was very specific. The cat said, I'm not long for this world. I have some disease in, and then I saw like a gallbladder, a liver. I'm not very familiar with biology, but I saw that part of the body. And I'm helping my human expand their connection to Reiki. And I saw her, that the human petting the cat every morning, and that there's a very specific love vibration frequency, and that the cat was coming through because this person was about to give birth. And the cat said, I'm going to make it through the birthing process. I'm going to be very involved, and I'm going to be there for the few months afterward. And I remember this sort of like it, when the energy moved through me, it was very intense and I felt very emotional. Which I feel like is part of the boundaries around this intuitive work, is learning how to get into it without getting kind of swept up in it. Mm-hmm. And I remember treading very lightly when I told this person, I said, this is not predictive at all, but is your cat struggling with some sort of liver or gallbladder issue? And she gasped and she said, well, she has gallbladder cancer, actually. She's had it for quite some time. And I said, you know, there's no knowing, of course, but the sense that I get is that your cat is actually like gently sort of transitioning, but she wants to hang around for your birth process, that's very important to her. And I have goosebumps talking about this even now, that my client shared a very personal series of photos that were taken during her home birth process. And the cat was in every single photo right next to her. And it brings me to tears because it's just, there's very special reasons why our animals choose us in this lifetime. This client was actually able to Reiki connect with her cat, continue every single morning, even when she was busy in newborn land, and transition this cat quietly into the next life for her, into the spirit realm. And she was able to open up her spiritual gifts through this really special connection.
That is so, so beautiful, Nadia. I'm so glad that you had that experience. It's really what you're describing is exactly why I treasure what I get to do and why I think it's so important, not just to do it, but to really teach others and help others to do it. I think the more that we can expand our consciousness in this way and open our perspectives across species, we begin to be able to reach one another more easily. You know, there's something about animals. They're so irresistible to so many of us. They open our hearts in a way that sometimes we just can't quite do with other people. But I see it as a pathway. I see that connection and that love and being able to reach into the animal's perspective as a way in which we can also grow our empathy for one another and reach across divisions and differences on this planet as humans, and begin to hear each other more clearly.
Are you finding that people are more open to this now than they were when you first began your practice 15 years ago?
It feels more accepted. Well, I think I've always been lucky enough to be surrounded by a lot of people who are open to this. I think it's more out there in a broader conversation. It doesn't seem quite as woo-woo. And I hope in some way that I've helped to demystify that. It's really important to me to spread that awareness of this as a natural foundational language and not as some impossible, unreachable, mystical gift.
Why do you think that this openness, why do you think it's so important that our planet wake up to the sentience and the dignity of the animals right now?
I think because as we can do that, we can really open up to one another. As I said, we see things through our own eyes. When you begin to see through the eyes of the animals, and their perspectives are very, very different from ours. The world doesn't look the same to them. All the different species have different, they see different wavelengths of light. They have different focuses. Their eyes are positioned differently. Some don't even have eyes. So our sensory interpretation of our world is very species dependent. But if we can begin to see through the perceptions and emotions of animals, I also think it helps us see through the perspectives of our fellow humans and reach across borders more warmly. And I also think that when we can see and feel through the perspectives of the animals, it brings us a little closer to understanding what our natural world desperately needs to heal and thrive.
It's such a powerful and important message. I want to connect with nature so much more than, and I feel really lucky that I'm able to, but actually just putting my hand on my dogs each morning is a connection to the natural world. And we are part of the natural world. It's so easy to feel separate from. I hear often from people that their dogs, their cats, their horses connect them to this frequency of unconditional love that they weren't able to tap into unconditional love from perhaps their family of origin or their friend group. What is that?
I think, unfortunately, a lot of us have been hurt or have hurt, even inadvertently, others. We carry a lot with us from our experiences and our conditioning. There's just something about animals that allows that light to spark and glow a little bit more, even in a hurt heart. Again, I see it. I see this connection as a pathway, as, you know, it's not just about connecting one human and one animal. It's the more of those connections are made, they then go out into the world. The human goes out into the world and feels a greater ability to open, to create paths, to listen, to reach out really cooperatively. And I think the animals also walk away from the experience with a sense of hope and reassurance that they sometimes didn't have going in. Because the animals are really and truly listening to us all the time, but a lot of them feel like they're not being heard, you know? So it's this strange one-way situation that can be very frustrating. And when they see that door open and that path being made, it's like, oh, all right. Yeah, I want to work harder to make this all work. Yeah, I want to cooperate. I want to play this game. Look, you know, look at the way that we can connect back and forth.
I think there's such a beautiful spiritual opening that happens through animals, where a lot of the time we're conditioned to think that humans have dominion over animals, that there's some part of us that makes us above animals. But actually, as you open yourself up to more spiritual values and principles, you recognize that love is the whole point. And if our animals are actually more closely connected to love and forgiveness and light, in terms of hierarchy, there actually is much more that we can learn from them. And I think that that's one of the points that I want people to come away from, is what can we learn from animals? What can we actually look at them and recognize? You are in some ways much more advanced than I am.
That forgiveness piece is really huge. I see it every single day. And it's funny because I will often have people coming to me saying, oh, you know, just does my dog forgive me? Does my horse forgive me? I made this mistake, right? And the animals often are like, what is she talking about? You know, because they don't hold on to stuff in quite the same way. And that forgiveness, I have experienced it as a very ready energy in animals. They are very ready to forgive and let go. They don't see any evolutionary or survival purpose to a lack of forgiveness. It doesn't mean they can't be traumatized or hold on to experiences. But there is this willingness to keep going and keep connecting and keep loving. That is such a beautiful example.
Brooke, I'm just so grateful to have this conversation with you. And as we wind our conversation down, I just want to ask you if there are any books that you read that were really formative about your understanding of animal communication, if people are looking for more resources here.
There are a lot of wonderful books out there. In truth, some of the ones that have informed me the most haven't been specifically about this type of animal communication. I actually really, really love to read the in-depth scientific investigative work that's being put out there. There are some really, really beautiful books, including some new ones that are very, An Immense World is a new one. It's still in hardcover, and it's a beautiful exploration of all of the different ways in which animals can experience our world and the ways in which that differs from our own understanding and experience of the world. So a lot of that actually very biologically based reading really has informed and appealed to me. I've also spent quite a bit of time working in the wild with animals, with undomesticated animals, which is a really different communication experience. And some of them have absolutely no use, interest, or time, literally survival time, to communicate. But just being in their presence and trying to kind of climb into their perspective and the way they interact with the world has been really informative to me. So for me, I have found books on animal communication to be slightly less instructive and a sort of more broad array of reading. On the nature of animals, their abilities, their sensations, their perspectives, to be really beautiful leaping off points.
I think perhaps what I'm tapping into is as people listen, I can feel them yearning for you to write a book, for you to share all of your experiences. And if that's correct for you, you can step into that, but consider the invitation open. I can feel many people wanting to hear so much more from you. And Brooke, I just really want to thank you for your time and create one final opening. If there's anything else that you feel like people should know about the animal world or this work.
Thank you so much, Nadia. This has been the most beautiful way to spend the morning. I'm just buzzing inside from the joy of getting to share this work with you and feeling the way your energy is so open and excited by it. One beautiful thought I'd love to leave everyone with is just be, really be with the animals in your life. And if you don't have any animals of your own, sit out in nature, find a park bench, take a moment even to enter the eyes of a pigeon on a nearby fountain, a bird on a branch, and just sit in that stillness and allow yourself to wander down the path of what that animal might be seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, touching. See where it leads. And then with the animals in your own life, the ones in your own family, take moments to let them smell what they want to smell, hear what they want to hear, walk where they want to walk. Follow them sometimes. We spend a lot of time being directed by the structures of our society and by the often very good advice of trainers, but we do spend a lot of time regulating our animals, the ones that live with us. Take some time to let them have the lead for a second. See where they take you. Give them that gift of those opportunities for play and exploration. Let them teach you something for a moment. It can be so grounding and so healing. I will caution, however, that once you open the door to your animal's full and glorious expression, there is no reeling it back in. A very dear, dear friend of mine, actually, who you know as well, one of the greatest vets I've ever met, laughs at me constantly that my animals are among the worst to work on because they have so many open opinions. I will say that once you open this door, there's no going back, but nothing in me would ever, ever want to go back through that door again. It's an incredibly vibrant and fulfilling and loving world to play in with animals.
Play feels like a place where we can really emphasize today, going back to the old Stoic horse that looked at you and said, all you do is work. I think that that's what we can learn from our animals is play.
Absolutely.
And beingness.
Yeah. They have a sense of the present that is a true gift and truly instructive.
Fantastic. And just to wrap up that last point you made about the open opinions, that you gave me such tactical advice for my very opinionated bulldog that he can have flair and drama and pizzazz, but within limits, that there are very specific tactical things. When we have people over, we're going to make sure that he has a safe, calm, separate space because he tends to cause a little bit of a ruckus when we have people in our home. And, you know, I think that it's a balance and, I'm really grateful for that instruction or invitation rather that you shared with me last week. Thank you so much.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me today.
And if folks want to learn more about Brooke's work, her practice is called Four Legs and a Soul. Four is spelled out F-O-U-R, the number four. And you can find her at fourlegsandasoul.com or her Instagram, Four Legs and a Soul, where you can follow her different adventures with various horses. I know you post a lot of horses and other animals that you work with. Are there any other ways that you'd like people to stay connected with you, Brooke, or does that cover off on it?
I think that's great. And my contact information is on the website and you're free to reach out via email or text. I am around and thrilled and excited to engage with you and your animals.
Thank you so much, Brooke. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.